This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 8th of November, 2021. So an interesting close to last week. We had that U.S. jobs report. I'll get down on the details, into the details on that. The headline's strong on the payrolls growth, but there were some other numbers that were a little bit of a cause for pause. You know, not a negative session, but we did pull off the highs after a couple of really strong days earlier in the week. Peter, what's your takeaway here? And what the heck is going on with Tesla and Elon Musk over the weekend?
Yeah, so he put out on Saturday a poll on Twitter where we have had enough talk about billionaires sitting on unrealized gains, and that was a huge poke at the constant political talk from the Democratic Party about, you know, a wealth tax. And Elon Musk have been pretty have had very strong opinions about the pros and cons of that. And so I think that was sort of the outlay of why he did the polling. And 3.5 million people voted in a very short time span. And then the poll was closed, and 58% said he should sell 10% of his Tesla stake. That was what he put out in the poll, whether he should do that. So that's worth around $21 billion as of Friday's closing price. And he said in a follow-up tweet that he will respect that. So we'll see how the market takes that, because Tesla is a heavyweight in the S&P 500 especially in the NASDAQ 100 futures. But I think it was a clever move. So typically what you would do is you would have orchestrated this in a block trade, and then you just announced it on the to the stock exchange that you had done this transaction. And that's typically very negative. By front loading or preemptively announcing it in this more democratic way, if you will, I think takes a lot of the potential negatives out of a key shareholder selling 10% of Tesla shares.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, we talked on Friday's podcast about whether the stock market had essentially become people buying Amazon and Tesla options, as the volumes there have been incredible. These 1 week options, etc., forcing market makers, as calls are bid up, to buy the underlying to sort of delta hedge what's going on. But it's also interesting to see, looking at the Saxo equity theme baskets there on slide 2 of today's slide deck, you can find our slide decks on the link in the podcast description. So logistics, but bubble stocks in general and some of the other categories having a pretty negative day on what was nominally sort of an unchanged day if you look at the broader averages.
Yeah, there was definitely some of the growth pockets that did very very bad, and the green transformation we should highlight were doing a bad day as well. I think on the positive side, just very quickly, because before we move on, travel was up almost 5%, driven by big gains for Airbnb and Expedia that both reported better than expected earnings and revenues. So at least for those two companies with a broad footprint in the US, there's really a pickup in demand for traveling. And before we go to the big story on Friday and your takeaway on what's going on in currencies and fixed income rates, John, just quickly, in China, the real estate story there, Evergrande is down in today's session, but some of the other real estate makers are actually up. And one of the big ones, China Vanke, is considerably up, because they got the get-go from the board on Friday to divest through an IPO on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange their services unit. And that's the playbook that all the other real estate makers are taking right now. So they are doing these public offerings to raise cash for their parent company, at the same time trying to unlock some value in these services units, which are quite much more stable and less pro-cyclical and prone to be pulled down in this housing crisis that we are currently observing in China. Pause, I should probably say. Yeah.
Okay, so let's rewind a little bit to what happened on Friday. And to me, the most interesting markets that stuck out for me were treasuries and gold. And I'll get to gold in a second, Ola, but just to briefly to recap. So yes, the payrolls were great. The revision was great, plus 235K to the prior 2 months. But I guess some of the internals and the other stuff not leading to any panic about a wage price spiral. We had average hourly earnings up the expected and quite strong 0.4% month on month, 4.9% year on year. But there was a average weekly hour adjustment of minus 0.1. So those would have been a bit lower if that's small. And that average weekly hour figure is just a completely random variable that hops back and forth. So in other words, and with the participation rate steady instead of rising, it's just not, nothing. It wasn't a shoot the lights out report, as I think I said on Twitter. But really, to me, the most interesting thing, the dollar softened a little bit. It tried to strengthen on the back of the payrolls number, but then it softened again into the close. If you look, euro dollar bounced up, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But it was really in the treasury market, and we'll have Althea on tomorrow to slice and dice this. But I mean, a pretty chunky rally as we're seeing the yield curve flatten, but flatten as people are actually bidding up the long end. And there's a lot of positioning out there. There was a Bloomberg opinion piece. I'll try to tweet that out as well, talking about this. There's a heavy speculative short in U.S. treasuries. But seeing these treasuries rally in this big move back below 1.5%, quite interesting. It really needs some explanation if this move sticks lower. With the backdrop of supposedly we're all supposed to be losing our minds about inflationary risks going forward. This suggests there's some kind of either market positioning got this all wrong, there's all kinds of macro bets that are running for the hills, or there is some long-term concern about economic growth outcomes. But Ola, this, and I imagine it has to be related, this move in gold on Friday was quite considerable. It takes us a lot much closer back to that key resistance level in spot gold. What's your take on gold here?
Well, we did indeed jump to a 2 months high over on Friday, and also just slightly higher over the week overnight in Asia, just drifting a bit lower now. You're absolutely right. That the reason why gold found such a nice bid on Friday was this fact: this yield drop that you mentioned, John, below 1.5% in the 10-year tenor, was really driven by stable break evens and thereby lower real yields. So real yields once again are trading close to negative 1.1%. It has been quite volatile recently, but as long as we keep real yields at these quite low levels, then it's still all to play for, you can say, in the gold market. 1835 is still the key level. We need to get some momentum back into the market. We need to see some ETF investors coming back in after just seeing a slow bleed now for many months. So I think until we do take out that level, then we really don't have a firm view on the strength in the market. But it was a good attempt on Friday, and let's see if we can build on that.
Yeah, and crypto up quite strongly into this morning as well. And some have speculated whether gold stays boring as long as crypto is in charge in terms of speculative energy.
That story most certainly won't go away.
Yeah. All right. So very briefly on the Forex reaction, again, the dollar sort of poking towards its strongest levels in many places. You can look at euro dollar there on slide 5. Minor new low there, but quickly rejected, but not a profound enough rejection yet to suggest that we are going to see reversal here. But that's the status we're looking for. What is the status on the dollar? I think those lower U.S. yields are dollar negative unless we have a really ugly risk sentiment developments, which would bring the dollar's safe haven status potentially back into play. But look at slide 5 on the FX board. So on the right, those trend strength readings. So you're seeing the really weak sterling after that debacle from the Bank of England last Thursday. Was that a one-off adjustment or do we see some trending? We are at key levels, both in cable, the low 134s, if it trades back down towards there, and in euro sterling, where it's been interacting with the 200-day moving average from the downside. So a key status as well on where is sterling this week. And then you see the shift in momentum for gold there as well. Okay, let's staying on the FX space. Ola, you helpfully provided your latest weekly commitment of traders report from the U.S. futures exchanges. So how are futures traders, and specifically the non-commercials or specs, are positioned relative to the dollar? And you can see that on slide 6. So the dollar long is still very much there, very elevated, but it's come off a little bit.
It has been for the past 3 weeks, just been a little bit of selling coming back into to the dollar. But I think the key takeaway from last week was basically, if you look at the table there on slide 6, that we saw overall reductions both in long and short positions. And we have to remember this, the cutoff date was last Tuesday, so it was the day before the FOMC meeting. So some risk off in the market, which generally just led to a small reduction in the overall dollar long. And do remember, if you look on the short side, the by far biggest position right now remains the yen short. And that's the highest I think we had in a couple of, probably I think it's 3 years, a 3 year high on that yen short. So that's really where some action could occur if we see a change in direction there. And I'll keep the mic and move on to the energy commodity space once again. And I think there's just really only one chart we need to watch this week if you are following the energy market, and that's the basically the daily gas flows from Russia to Europe. You can see that here on slide 7. I've highlighted the 4 of the major pipelines coming into Europe. there's been a lot of talk recently with this Malinov line, which goes through Poland into Germany. That's the bottom of the, and you can see the flows there historically earlier this year has been relatively stable. But it's dropped to zero now in the past few weeks, and that's really the one we need to keep an eye on. Whether Putin is going to make good on his order to Gazprom to increase supplies actually from today and onwards, because by now Gazprom should have been able to refill domestic stocks within Russia. So, if we don't see this increase, gas prices could go higher. We already seen a 10% higher opening this morning on Dutch TTF. Benchmark gas, it has drifted a little bit lower since then, up around 7% right now, but it could easily move higher. And what is important, why is that important for the oil market? It is because OPEC keeps the supplies relatively tight. US is in a hot spot. They can't really do much. They can release some strategic reserves, but that's not going to have a long-term positive or negative price impact. So if we add to this spiking gas prices, on the back of no supplies from Russia, then that gas to oil switch is very much still in play, and that could increase demand for oil, thereby pushing energy prices or fuel and oil prices even further up. So that's the single chart I will keep a very close focus on this week. And just finally on staying with China, a key source of demand for commodities, and probably one of the reasons why we've seen some weakness now during the past few weeks across the commodity space, and that is the worries about growth in China, but also the near-term power shortages that has cut demand for several of these energy-intensive commodities. And we saw that pop up in the numbers for October. Import data was weak for quite a few of these commodities, especially look at crude oil in the top left on slide 8. It dropped to the lowest level in 18 months on a monthly basis. So that's quite a significant can drop, and that can obviously help just soothe some of the worries we have in the oil market right now. But generally, a month where weaker demand from China, and that will be quite key going forward as well, whether this so-called super cycle can be maintained.
All right. And part of that super cycle also being about whether we can replace some of that demand with EVs. Of course, we've talked and the market's very much focused on Tesla. But you have some thoughts on Rivian here, the interesting pricing of this IPO. What's going on with this company, Peter?
Yeah, so it's the Amazon-backed U.S. Electrical vehicle maker. Their focus on is on trucks, and that's why Amazon have been supporting this company financially, because it's I guess it's in Amazon's interest to get a trucking fleet that it will be fully electrical. So Rivian is right now on a roadshow. They're trying to muster some demand for its shares, and they have significantly increased their IPO range from 57 to 62 range as of Thursday or Friday till the weekend, 72 to 74 price range. And the pricing of the shares are expected to close on tomorrow, and then first day of trading on Wednesday. And we'll be tracking this one for obvious reasons. There's a lot of focus on electric vehicles because of COP26, but also, as you said, John, Tesla. And we think one of the drivers, so there are the options, there are the positive news flows, that Tesla seems to be one of the few that actually are able to ramp up EV production with the rest of the car makers stalling, maybe except for Volkswagen. So I have also put this thesis out that one of the reasons why Tesla is maybe is being supercharged is the fact of simple supply and demand of pure EV plays, right? You cannot, I mean, Volvo, they say they want to go EV, but it's not a pure play. The same for Volkswagen. Then you have the Chinese makers, NIO, XPeng, and Li Auto, but they are Chinese. So I don't think they don't fully move into the realm of a lot of institutional investors in the developed world. So that leaves Tesla as being almost the only play. But now we have Rivian coming in, and I think that's going to be super exciting to get them because now we're getting a lot of electric vehicles publicly listed. And then staying with the EV industry, there are news out over the weekend that the Chinese government is really looking at massively increased investments and support for the battery industry and electric vehicles overall. So you saw the two largest lithium miners, Jinki Lithium and Ganfeng Lithium, rising in today's session, and the CATL and Eve Energy, which is the two major battery producers in China, were also up substantially. And so there's it seems like China has decided that, you know, just like they did on solar panels, LED lighting, and other key technologies, they're gunning for taking the massive global leadership in battery production.
All right, and while we have had a peak in earnings season, there's still plenty going on, as I can see from your overview there on slide 10.
Yeah, but we're certainly out of the massive impact phase on the overall market to that of just, you know, I would say, drip here and there impact on different industries. So it's not a big impact any longer on macro. But today's focus, of course, is on PayPal, one of the biggest players in our payments basket. And as you can see on the financials I've inserted there on slide 10, you can see that the growth rate is coming down substantially as the headwinds are sort of easing. But there's still a lot of focus on PayPal. They set themselves back in February when they put out their big plan for PayPal over the next 5-10 years that they think they can grow the business sustainably, organically, around 20% per year. They just walked away from Pinterest, which would have been quite an interesting acquisition, very different take from a payments company. But the whole focus is on the, you know, digital wallets, mobile wallets. How can PayPal, you know, penetrate that part of the market? They're very strong in e-commerce. That's a core business, but they want to provide this wallet mobile payments that you do on brick and mortar stores, but they also are dwelling into a cryptocurrency account, the same as Square. So super interesting to follow that one. And then maybe we should just say that SoftBank Group reported earnings as well in the Japanese session, recording a record quarterly loss for their Vision Fund. They're exiting positions actually out of PayPal, Amazon, and TSMC. And it's specifically DiDi Global, which is a competitor to Uber. And their Coupang, which is the largest e-commerce site in South Korea, it's those two companies that are really pulling down the Vision Fund. So a lot of scars right there for the very bold technology investor out of Japan.
All right, great stuff. Let's look at the calendar for today and the rest of the week. Just briefly highlighting today, we have Fed Vice Chair Clarida, he of the well-timed trades into equity funds in the heart of the pandemic crisis. I'm a bit of tongue-in-cheek there. He was, of course, the center of this scandal about Fed investment behavior, trading behavior during their active tours of duty. Powell out later, but this is opening remarks at a conference. And then we have the Treasury auction. So again, if there's something going on in the Treasury market, this should be the week where we see a bit more action and volatility with these auctions coming up. A three-year today, that's less interesting than the 10-year and 30-year tomorrow, Wednesday. And then I would just pull out the key ones this week, that Chinese CPI and PPI, especially as important, the PPI being an important global benchmark for inflation, and the U.S. October CPI expected at a hot 5.8% year-on-year on Wednesday. For today, that's a wrap, and we'll be back tomorrow, of course, with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.